हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
The Nectar Devotion is a summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which was written in Sanskrit by Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. He was the chief of the six Goswamis, who were the direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he first met Lord Chaitanya, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada was engaged as a minister in the Mohammedan government of Bengal. He and his brother Sanatana were then named Dabir Kash and Shakir Malik, respectively, and they held responsible posts as ministers of Nawab Hussein Shah. At that time, 500 years ago, the Hindu society was very rigid, and if a member of the Brahmana caste accepted the service of a Mohammedan ruler, he was at once rejected from Brahmana society. That was the position of the two brothers, Dabir Kash and Shakir Malik. They belonged to the highly situated Saraswat Brahmana community, but they were ostracized due to their acceptance of ministerial posts in the government of Hussein Shah. Sanatan Goswami was the prime minister and Rupa Goswami was the treasurer. It is the grace of Lord Chaitanya that he accepted these two exalted personalities as his disciples and raised them to the position of Goswamis, the highest position of Brahminical culture. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya accepted Haridas Thakur as his disciple, although Haridas happened to be born of a Mohammedan family. And Lord Chaitanya later on made him the acharya of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you see is that the devotional process actually doesn't have any connection or meaning with one's conditioned nature. So it doesn't matter the background. So amongst the smarter brahmanas, then they would consider them impure and unfit, right, for practicing the Vedic rituals and activities. But we see is that devotional service being beyond that, then it's not, there's not a problem. One is not in any way handicapped by this fact. But we also should note is that that doesn't mean that we hold on to it, right? The very thing that is our natural disqualification, that the chanting process is beyond that, therefore, or more powerful than that, so we take up the process. But it's not that then we take it that we can hold on to that conditioned nature, which is our disqualification, and somehow or another make it a qualification. Right, or make it a standard by which we judge. Like in the evening class, we're discussing mimamsa. Mimamsa means your method of interpretation. So then the method of interpretation, one, must be based on the Veda, and then within that it has to be connected to a certain school. If it's not based on the Veda, then the mimamsa cannot be correct. We can't just make up our own, be speculative about the whole process. So we have to be very, very careful that our own conditioned nature, that doesn't become the standard. We may be affected by it, we may have the habits of it, but that's something that we practice to adjust, right? Bring the consciousness to the right platform, have the proper standards of, you know, cleanliness and proper behavior. We don't use it as an excuse, well, you know, I'm from this, so therefore what's the problem? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, if someone is saying, well, you know, we do like this, you know, in the West, so what's the big deal? So, okay, you take that and, you know, you have a certain amount of Westerners, maybe. How many would there be? I don't even think there'd be a billion of them. Less, right? I would think less than a billion would be if you counted, you know, what we would call the Western world. And so then, but then let's say if somebody was from, like in this case, Mohammedan background, and what was their culture and ways of dealing in their normal day-to-day society, if they insisted that, you know, in the temple they could behave like that, everyone would go, well, no, this is not, we know, we're not this body Prabhu, this, that, go on and on and on. But if it comes from our own, you know, Judaic or Christian background, then that's fine. Nobody even blinks an eye. You know? And if it's New Age, then it's, you know, it's ushered in with great awe and reverence. You understand? So this is a problem. So the disqualification does not hamper devotional service as long as you let go of it. You know what I'm saying? You've touched something impure, so you can be purified by taking a bath. But if you hold on to what's making you contaminated and say, you know, I'm taking a bath, so it doesn't matter. You know? So that's not actually the ideal process. You have a doubt on that, a question on that. You're wondering if while the bath's going on, if you're pure, but as soon as the bath stops, then you're impure again or something. Lord Chaitanya's principle is universal. Anyone who knows the science of Krishna and is engaged in the service of the Lord is accepted as being in a higher position than a person born in a family of a brahmana. That is the original principle accepted by all Vedic literatures, especially by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The principle of Lord Chaitanya's movement in educating and elevating persons to the exalted post of a Goswami is taught in the Nectar of Devotion. Right, so here we're starting to, because of the nature of, you know, the modern books, so then you have a preface, or you can have a foreword, you have an introduction, all these different things. So their whole purpose then is that of what the Mangalacharan does, the Anubandha Chatushtaya, right? Remember that? Everybody remember? Never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Right? We didn't discuss Anubandha Chatushtaya. We didn't discuss.
There's four things that the introduction says. What the book is about, the glories of reading that book, the students for that book, and the glorifying the deity of that book.
Yes, like that. It can also include, when it's telling the topic, it can also give a summary of the whole book or portions of the book like that. So where did you hear of this? In the class. How come he never heard of it? You weren't in the class.
I'm sure I was.
Okay, so that's it. So the introduction is doing that. So here we've just said the principle of Chaitanya's movement is in educating and elevating everyone to an exalted post of a Goswami is taught in the Nectar Devotion. Right, so that's what it is. It's how to elevate everyone to the platform of Goswami. It means so that one is not absorbed in the material world, but one is able to engage the senses always in the Lord's service. Right? So that doesn't mean that everybody's supposed to, you know, sit under a tree. It means the consciousness like that. And then if you have opportunity to sit under a tree, great. But if you don't, then don't worry. Lord Chaitanya met the two brothers, Dabir Kash and Shakir Malak, in a village known as Ramakeli, in the district of Malda. And after that meeting, the brothers decided to retire from government service and join Lord Chaitanya. Dabir Kash, who was later to become Rupa Goswami, retired from his post and collected all the money he had accumulated during his service. It is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that his accumulated savings in gold coins equaled millions of dollars and filled a large boat. Right? So they're not talking about, you know, so large, you know, means you have these little dinky boats that you get across, you know, they're like a, you know, from like pillar to pillar here, like that. So he's saying a large boat, so it means much bigger than that. So if you fill that up with gold coins, it's a bit of money, right? And then you take that 500 years ago, so inflation was very, very minimal then, so. He divided the money in a very exemplary manner, which should be followed by devotees in particular and by humanity in general. 50% of his accumulated wealth was distributed to the Krishna conscious persons, namely the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. 25% was distributed to relatives, and 25% was kept against emergency expenditures and personal difficulties. Later on, when Sakir Malik also proposed to retire, the Nawab was very much agitated and put him into jail. But Sakir Malik, who was later to become Srila Sanatana Goswami, took advantage of his brother's personal money, which had been deposited with a village banker. Village banker has one boatload full of gold coins, right? Like that. And that's the village banker, you know. Then what about the city bankers, right? And escaped from the prison of Hussein Shah. In this way, both brothers joined Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. So he's saying here is that he has this so much wealth, and then he divided it like this. What means you're generating wealth. So therefore, half of it he would use for Krishna conscious activities. A quarter would be used for taking care of the family, and a quarter would be used for emergency. That would be put aside for personal difficulties. So like this, this is a, you know, standard by which one should think, that one should be giving in charity, one should be taking care of things, and one should be saving money for emergencies. Like that. These are how one should deal with one's money. So, yeah. Srila Rupa Goswami first met Lord Chaitanya at Prayag, Allahabad, India. And on the Dashrameda bathing ghat of that holy city, the Lord instructed him continually for 10 days. The Lord particularly instructed Rupa Goswami on the science of Krishna consciousness. These teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Srila Rupa Goswami are narrated in our book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Right, so that is what he taught him was there, and then from that he asked him to document that. So his documentation of that conversation, that's the nectar of devotion. Later, Srila Rupa Goswami elaborated the teachings of the Lord with profound knowledge of revealed scriptures and authoritative references from various Vedic literatures. Srila Srinivasacharya, so that's the method, is Lord Chaitanya explains it, then the proper disciple then takes that and establishes it. Does that make sense? Not that we see, okay, Prabhupada has established something, and then we say, well, this is not right, we should be adjusted, this, that. That's not disciple. Disciple is Prabhupada's explained this, then we figure out how to make it, how to present it, so that those who need authorization, it's not enough that Prabhupada said it, then you find the authorization. Does that make sense? That's disciple. This other thing is then, oh, the spiritual master doesn't know what he's saying or doesn't know time, place, and circumstance, right? You're dealing in the spiritual world, which is the origin of everything, right? And then you're dealing here with a reflection of that. You know, that's like, and then saying that, oh, he knows the spiritual world, doesn't know the material world. That would be like saying is that you're discussing about the tree in the water, the reflection. And then when somebody makes a comment about that, you say, oh, he doesn't know the reflection very well. He only knows the original tree standing on the bank. So what does he know about the reflection in the water? Now, would we call that intelligent or would we call that very foolish? Right? So therefore, when people make the comment, oh, Prabhupada, you know, doesn't know what's going on here, because he's from the spiritual world, that's deifying Prabhupada to place him like God at a distance, so here in the material world, where we think it's very real, we can do whatever we want. You understand? So anytime that is used, that's deification. They're respecting, seemingly respecting Prabhupada on one level, but on another side, it's actually atheistic, because you don't actually give them any credit. You know, God is all-pervading, omniscient, omnipotent, but actually, you know, what goes on here, it's the modern world, his laws don't apply. So what are you saying? You're saying he's omnipotent, but you're saying his laws don't apply. Does that make sense? So it's very important to be very careful of these things like that. They're not just, it's not that because we thought of it, it's valuable, right? this is the difficulty in the modern scenario, is one is not only so attached to the body, one's even attached to one's thoughts. That just because he thought it, it must be valuable. Right? But we have to remember, only Krishna is satya sankalpa. Whatever he thinks is truth. Like that. We're not satya sankalpa. Like that. So we have to always be very careful about that. Yes? No? What do you think?
I agree.
You agree. What did you agree with?
That we're not satya sankalpa.
That we're not satya sankalpa. So who is satya sankalpa?
Krishna.
Okay. Very good. And what about the Anubandha Chatushtaya?
I agree with that too.
You agree with that too. And what is it that you're agreeing with?
Introduction.
Okay, so if you're going to introduce something and you want to actually practically use it, what do you have to know?
You have to know what the thing is about.
Okay, so that's okay. So the subject matter itself. And then?
The purpose of it.
Purpose of it? Yeah, why do you need to know the purpose of it?
So you can know what to look for.
To know what to look for? Okay. But why do you need to have something to look for?
Because you're interested in reading the book.
Okay. But let's say if I want to use the body of knowledge, what do I have to know?
How to use it.
How to use it, okay. But why would I use it in the first place?
Because you have something you have to do.
Something you have to do. But then, if you don't have to do it, you wouldn't do it.
Because you like to do it?
Because you like to do it. There's an interest in it, right? So that means the field of activity is there, so you have the subject matter. Then there's then there is the element of, then from that only you can become attracted to it. Right? Because when you're attracted, you'll act. Right? So, to be attracted here, you might have to point out what are the benefits, what you can get from it. You know what I'm saying? So you say, okay, here's God consciousness. Okay, great. You know, by knowing that, you can, you know, go back to Godhead, you know, live with God eternally. Like that, you don't have to stay in this, you know, trash can here. And then you might go, that sounds interesting. So now you want to know, how does it work? You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. And now, in there, is it a matter of the subject? Any subject matter is for everybody.
So it tells you the people that would be interested in this book.
Yeah, who would be interested, or at least who are qualified to be interested.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because it says science of Krishna consciousness, so that means then a logician might be interested, right? Or say devotional service, so then. A religionist might be interested. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, given is that those mentalities are useless. Right? Those aren't what's going to make things work, because you don't understand God by logic. You know, he is not understood through ritual. Right? What it is through the proper knowledge and devotion, and that's application, that's how he'll be pleased. Right, so that's going beyond these. Right, so you have to, the subject matter, what will be the benefits gotten by that, who's qualified for it, and then what is the, you know, what is the actual process that it's defining. Yes? Right, so sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan are all there. Does that make sense? Right, because if you don't know the sambandha, abhideya, prayojan, how do you work with it? Right, that's why people write introductions to books. That's why they write Mangalacharans, because so that you'll understand it. But unfortunately, in most, you know, for many people, that the introduction is something you don't read. You immediately go to the first chapter, like that. But the idea is that you'll get benefit by reading it, but if you understand the introduction, then you get more, because you actually know what it's for, what it's doing. Right? You don't have to wait till you get to the end of the book to figure it out. Yes?
Yes.
No? Okay. That's why in the Vedic, it's actually the opening verse. It's not a separate aspect. Later, Srila Srinivasacharya described in his prayers to the six Goswamis. They were all highly learned scholars, not only in Sanskrit, but also in foreign languages, such as Persian and Arabic. They very scrutinizingly studied all the Vedic scriptures in order to establish the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the authorized principles of Vedic knowledge. The present Krishna conscious movement is also based on the authority of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. We are therefore generally known as Rupanugas, or followers in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. It is only for our guidance that Srila Rupa Goswami prepared this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is now presented in the form of the Nectar of Devotion. Persons engaged in the Krishna conscious movement may take advantage of this great literature and may be solidly situated in Krishna consciousness. Now, by studying this, then he's giving another point here. By studying this book, one can be situated nicely in Krishna consciousness, right? Solidly here. So that means Rupanuga, we follow this, therefore we're Rupanugas. We don't follow this, how will we say we're Rupanugas? We say, oh, that doesn't matter, it doesn't apply now. That means, one, we're not Rupanugas, because we're not following Rupa. And two, we're saying his teachings aren't eternal, right? They only applied, you know, when? When did it stop being applicable? Right? It was written 500 years ago. So then, when does it actually stop being viable? Right? If we're going to say it doesn't apply now, then we'd have to give, you know, otherwise, how do you judge? You know, is there a certain thing? You know, a car becomes vintage after 20 years. You know, copyright, I think, what is it, 75 years or something? Then, you know, it becomes public domain. How do you define when it becomes not viable? Right? And if that's the case, then why is it that the same people who are saying this, if you say, okay, what kind of literature and books should the children study for their own upliftment and benefit, they'll start reeling off names of books that are hundreds of thousands of years old. Right? And somehow or another, those are relevant and enrich your life and everything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's just not logical, even though, of course, they claim to be, but that's why logicians are not invited for study of this literature, because they'll never understand it. Bhakti means devotional service. Every service has some attractive feature, which drives the servitor progressively on and on. Right? So that, what is it? So here it means every service has some attractive feature. That means the prajumna aspect. Every service, that's your sambandha. Your means your shankarshan, that this is the service. Then it has an attractive feature, which drives the servitor progressively on and on, which means because of that, then one is actively engaged. Does that make sense? Every one of us within this world is perpetually engaged in some sort of service. And the impetus for such service is the pleasure we derive from it. Driven by affection for his wife and children, a family man works day and night. A philanthropist works in the same way for love of the greater family, and a nationalist for the cause of his country and countrymen. That force which drives the philanthropist, the householder, and the nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of mellow relationship, whose taste is very sweet, right? So we're saying is that everyone is driven by these things, and so everything has this taste, this attractive feature. So that is rasa, and Krishna is rasa. So that means this, not only is he the, you know, the external forms and everything of what we're dealing with, but more importantly, he's the taste that we're getting from it, because he's rasa. It's not that, oh, he's only that rasa. No, he is rasa. Right? So the point is you're taking from that rasa, but you're seeing it in the mundane light. It doesn't change its nature. It doesn't change that it's Krishna. Right? So he is rasa. Then the devotees are the ashray of that rasa, so they draw that rasa from Krishna. Does that make sense? Mother Yashoda is the perfect mother, so she draws from Krishna the rasa of how do you say, being her son. Does that make sense? So therefore, Krishna is rasa, and then Lakshmi takes so many forms within this world that we perceive that draws from Krishna that rasa. Does that make sense? That's why then everything that we work with, it has something that's attractive feature. But we're trying to enjoy the external, right? Why? Because that's Lakshmi, so that's the whole point. We want to enjoy Lakshmi separate from Krishna. So we're thinking it's Lakshmi that's provided, but it's actually it's coming from rasa. So it's she taking that form, she's drawing that from Krishna. Right? That's what gives the taste. So therefore, if you deal with Lakshmi properly, then the rasa can be tasted. You deal with them not properly, it can't be tasted. Right? So it's not a matter of, well, if you know the Vedic, it's theory and it's not practical now. It's that everything that's going on, no matter what it is working on this principle. You're running a business, you're doing management, anything it is, you're simply working with the form that draws the rasa. Why is the man doing business? Because there's a rasa in that control, or getting the money, or the facility, or the position. But what is position? We didn't create it. The concept of position, we didn't create. The concept of money or power, we didn't create. It's already there. Because that's Krishna. That's the taste in that. That's rasa. And then Lakshmi takes the forms that then make forms of wealth or forms of position or forms of power and influence. Does this make sense? Right? So this is the science on how you actually deal with that. You know? And the point is of dealing with it, of dealing with the forms of the rasa that Krishna is manifesting here and the forms that Lakshmi is manifesting to draw that rasa, right? We have to remember is a reflection. So how much of the tree is in the water? Right? There's absolutely no comparison. You know, you can say that, okay, here are leaves and there are leaves. These leaves come from those leaves. This bark comes from that bark. Right? But the actual comparison of what you can get, so what are you getting from the there? Nothing. Do you actually get anything from the reflection? No, but if you think that it's there, oh, if I touch it or I do this and that, you're happy. So then you generate it, but it's an illusion to think that that is generating, because that has nothing. So everything that's here is coming from the spiritual world. But what is here as a reflection is just a spark. It's very, very minimal. And compared to that, the tree is like an unlimited ocean, because you actually have substance there. The other one, you actually make it up that you're getting some benefit from it. Because you think you're getting benefit from the dead matter. You're not. You're getting benefit from the taste you get that the dead matter draws from Krishna. And it's only happening because Krishna means Lakshmi has arranged to take the form of that dead matter that draws that taste. So we're completely in illusion about what is actually the process of what's going on here in this material world. Yes?
So therefore we're endeavouring to deal properly with Lakshmi and Krishna in the mood of service. So, and on one level we're disconnecting with this material world.
What is the material world? You understand when you say disconnecting?
Because technically, not connecting to Krishna.
Yeah, because if we're just disconnecting from the material world and we see that as a source of happiness, that technically is,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
It's
not saying that you're wrong here.
Yeah.
You go ahead. I'm just pointing out that these are the subtleties that make a difference in the actual presentation of our philosophy.
Yeah.
Because actually, it's not by becoming detached from here. Because the point is we're the ones that create the attachment.
Yeah.
So it's just giving up the illusion and seeing it for what it is. But so, it's not the detachment that makes us happy, because we're happy in the endeavor because we're connecting with Krishna. But because we don't recognize that, we get no benefit for that because it's not devotion. Because connecting with Krishna, if it's not favorable, is not devotional, right?
Yeah. So when we're connecting with Krishna, the relationship that begins to manifest, this is real.
Yes, that's real. That's real. But it's still small, right? Means, in other words, if you're directly perceiving Krishna through the forms of this world, like that, then you are connecting with Krishna and his internal potency, because that's actually what's going on. But it's small. That's the point. It's like, because you're dealing with, because the reflection does exist. It's not, when we say it's a reflection, we're not like the Mayavadi saying the reflection actually isn't there. We say it is there. But what we're saying is there's nothing there for the living entity, because it's only a reflection. The soul, being made of substance, can't take pleasure in non-substance. Right? It has to be absorbed in substance. So therefore, it's the material world, because we think it's separate from Krishna, right? Means the reflection of the tree in the water, we'll call it illusion if we are seeing it on its own. But we don't call it illusion, you know, if we see the tree. You know, it's the tree and its reflection, or the tree and its shadow. They go together, right? Does that make sense? So then it's not illusion. So it exists, but how much can you, what can you do with a reflection? So that's the point, is that what is here, then it is real. And the tastes that are there are real, and the interactions are real. But the amount of volume of tastes there is considered to be like a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of devotional service. That's the whole point. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you're starving, hungry, you know, rolling on the ground, dying, hungry, and I come along with, you know, a little, you know, how you say, piece a piece of bread that I can, you know, have to pick up with a very fine tweezers. You know, it's like nice pointing ones, you know, the ones you hate, but your mother always loved to get out the big splinters. One of those that you pick up very carefully because you might miss it, a little thing of bread. And then you come over to the person and go, here, and drop it into their hand and say, enjoy, you know, be happy, be prosperous. You know what I'm saying? So that's what the material world is offering. But because of conditioning, then not being in contact with the spiritual, we become readjusted to this. You know, it's just like stool never on any occasion is nice, but because that's all a pig has to eat, then it discerns between varieties of stools. So there are nicer stools and less nicer stools. You know what I'm saying? So in the same way as we've gotten to the point that we try to, you know, actually establish that, you know, yes, this reflection, this part of the reflection is high quality, you know, but this part of the reflection is, you know, not so high quality, not so favorable, not so prestigious. But it's just one reflection. There's no difference between one end and the other. Therefore, you know, what pebbles, sand, and gold, it doesn't make any difference. The baker and candlestick maker.
And the devotee, and, you know, I can't remember the third example, but like one better to die now, one, like...
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
The first example, so, like, for the devotee, it doesn't matter whether they live or die, it's it. So, when their mood is right, and the consciousness is right, and their... then Krishna's mercy comes, so then... As long as your consciousness is, as long as you're surrendering or endeavoring to surrender to Krishna, then you're tasting Krishna's mercy. So it makes
Krishna, your taste in Krishna consciousness
so
maintained.
Yes, so you're Krishna conscious. So then, obviously, it's it's only loving Krishna, but by consciousness, then the those souls that can stay in that consciousness all the time, then they.
It doesn't matter, because see, the thing is that from the indirect you remember the direct, because whatever if taste is here, it's based on a principle, and that principle is there in Krishna. You know, so that power is there in Krishna. You may be attracted to it from, you know, your bulldozer or, you know, your stick of dynamite that you blow up, you know, tree trunks with, or whatever it is that is there. But Krishna's power, you know, is always there. So therefore, the devotees are, you know, attracted by that. You know, he kills, you know, the big demons and does all kinds of, holds up Govardhan Hill. So this is powerful. So he's attractive. But it's just so much nicer. So you know that, okay, you know, the happiness you get from getting in your, you know, how you say, you know, 50-ton bulldozer, you know, like that, and you can knock anything over, you know, Lord of all you survey, you know, like that. The neighbor better not make any comments or you'll come and, you know, and bulldoze his house, or, you know, like this. So, you know, you have that feeling. But that feeling is Krishna. And the form of attaining that, which draws that particular taste of that power, is Lakshmi in the form of your bulldozer. Right? Like that, you know. So she's no wallflower, you know. Get this, you know, like that. So therefore, but the problem is he neither sees, he thinks the bulldozer is the source of power. That's why it's materialism. Because materialism, you think the material energy is the source of power, of life, of consciousness. You know, but it's not. Krishna is the source. So the bulldozer only allows, it is the medium for that power to be manifest. You know what I'm saying? So Lakshmi, by her service, then it, Krishna manifests. You understand? You understand? So the first thing is to understand that. Then the next thing is but if it's there, but then there's so much nicer forms, because here is just a spark. You know, why absorb yourself in the spark when there's a large fire there? So then one turns from that and then remembers, it becomes Udipan for remembering Krishna in Vrindavan, or Krishna in his relationships with the devotees. So that's the main thing. But in the process, because one's so distracted by your attachment to this bulldozer and its power, you know, you just push the buttons and move the levers and you can do whatever you want, then you start to see it's actually Krishna. It's not the machine. It's not this and that. It's actually Krishna's potency. It starts to break and wear away at this, because the illusion is strong because it's an illusion. As soon as it's not illusion anymore, then Prabhupada says it's like the snake with the fang, poisonous snake with the fangs taken out. It can't bite you anymore. You know, if you imagine the fangs are back, then of course it can bite you. You know, like that, you know. But it's not there, so as long as you understand that, then it starts to go away. Then the point is dealing. Now how do you deal with this? If you actually want that power, that the power can only be gained through this bulldozer. Right? In this example. So that means is that unless you deal with the bulldozer properly, you know, unless you serve the bulldozer properly, it won't act in a way that manifests the power, right? You don't put petrol in it, so it won't start. You know, you push the wrong buttons, and so it doesn't give the results that you want, right? So you can't appreciate the power. So that means only when you properly serve Lakshmi, according to the nature of the form she's taken, right? Then you are actually going to be in contact with Krishna. You understand? So what is the difference in the process? So that's why the devotees, they don't really make that much distinction between, you know, the devotional attitude and services and that same attitude being applied in your day-to-day life, because it's still exactly the same. It doesn't change. So it's the same process. That's how Prabhupada and others can come here and do all these activities that we would consider to be ordinary or mundane. And they're never affected by it because they don't see material energy. That's why I said so-called. You'll see in those sentences, it'll be so-called. Because that's not what they're dealing with. So we say, oh, how could Bhaktivinoda Thakur have 12 children? Because to him, he's not dealing with material energy. You know what I'm saying? He's a grihastha. They have children. Right? So that's the process. You deal with the wife properly, it produces children. You know what I'm saying? So if you're taking the concept of child as the element or the aspect of rasa, because that's where you're getting it, that means you deal with the wife properly, then you have children. You understand? So then by serving that, so they're serving Lakshmi through that. They're not enjoying their senses. You know what I'm saying? So it's very, very different. That's why in these shastras, they always kick out the moralist. Because the moralist has absolutely, totally missed the point. Because they think the morality stands on its own. It's only moral because of its connection to Krishna. Right? So you have your standard form of morality. But the actual purpose of morality means to do what pleases Krishna. So if something that is seemingly immoral pleases Krishna, therefore that's what's done. The rasa dance, you could take it as immoral. I've met devotees, not our own devotees, but devotees of Vishnu who will not worship Krishna because he's immoral. They'll worship Ramachandra because he's very moral. But they can't acknowledge at all or be respectful towards Krishna. They just don't like him. Like that. You understand? So a moralist can't approach Krishna because he is the source of everything. Therefore, all things are combined in him. So if you're not willing to practice the Chinta Beda Beda Tattva, don't bother with Krishna. Like that. Stick to a form that's very specific. Nrisimhadev is, you know, getting angry, protecting the devotee. Ramachandra is establishing religious principles. Stick to something very uncomplicated. You know, at least seemingly. You know? Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that this process shows you how, no matter what you're doing, you can see Krishna in it. And seeing it in there, then instead of the bulldozer becoming his main thing and all that, Krishna starts to become the main thing. Then he drives his bulldozer very nicely. In fact, he takes care of the bulldozer nicer now than he did before, because before it was his bulldozer and he's the lord of his bulldozer. But now that he understands that the bulldozer is actually a form of Lakshmi, therefore he's servant of Lakshmi, therefore he takes care of the bulldozer better than before. So this idea of that the devotee, by knowing this and this philosophy, it's not practical in the material world. It's so much more practical. To be a materialist without being God conscious, that's impractical. Because you're going to make up your own rules. How do you know how it works? Did you make it? No. You know, it's like, and to go back on that, why is that form taken? Why does Lakshmi take that form? Right? Does she just make them up? Krishna establishes them. In the primary creation, which is being described in the Purusha Shukta, then the primary creation of what are the rasas that are available here, from, it means in the reflection, what rasas are available, and what forms can you get them through? That's the primary creation. So it's still just rasa. You know what I'm saying? So all the different things, all the situations you can be in, lower, middle, higher planetary systems, all the places within, flat land, you know, hilly land, mountainous, you know, in the air, in the water, like that, all the different things, you know, like that, your different situations that may be there in the way of auspicious or inauspicious or anything that there's there, 8,400,000 species of life, all the things that the demigods that control all that, everything that there is, that's all established by Krishna. Therefore, when Lakshmi manifests, she's manifesting a form that is established by Krishna. Therefore, Mother Yashoda doesn't, you know, just make it up. The concept is already established by Krishna. Does that make sense? So she's doing that. So if we're going to be successful, if we're going to serve her, we have to accept that. So to say, oh, it's modern, we make up our own thing, That's not the reality. Reality is time, place, circumstance, but that has nothing to do with modern. That's right now. That's what's going on now, because otherwise, how do you define what's going on? We're here. We're in Bengal. We're sitting here in this place here and discussing Bhagavad. That's here and now. It's happening. But we'll say, oh, no, that doesn't apply. What do you mean? It's going on. You know what I'm saying? So all it is an excuse that I don't want to serve Lakshmi. I want to enjoy Lakshmi. And no one should tell me it's wrong. And I demand that I'm going to enjoy Lakshmi how I want, and she's going to happily, provide that taste in Krishna that I'm looking for. But that's unscientific, absolutely unscientific. But we're so attached to it that we demand that this is the way it is. And say all kinds of things and righteousness, this and that, and it has nothing to do with reality. It's absolute illusion. Total illusion. You cannot oppose the Vedic version. Why? Because the Vedic version is Lakshmi and Krishna, and there what is what everything you look at. So to say it doesn't apply means you're an impersonalist, because you're saying none of this exists. Or you're a complete materialist, because then you're saying that it exists separate from the Lord. It's the source of everything. So we'll have to end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.